first of all, congratulations on forging the relationship between PCM and CSIS. Excellent. And I declare my my support, both moral and otherwise.
It's the other way.
I think it's useful to be honest with one another about the state of the relationship between Central Europe and the United States, because there are factors that we often overlook. Number one, I would say, is that, for example, the United States is not a major investor in the region. It's usually number five, number six. Number two, the United States is not actually a major trading partner with our region. As regards Poland, I think it's $1 billion, maybe a bit more. To give you a comparison, we have 60 billion euros of trade with Germany, 20 billion euros of trade with Russia. Number three, it's not that there is less of the United States in Poland this year and this decade, but there is so much more of Europe in our region since we joined that the perception is that the U.S. presence has relatively diminished. This is really important because, say, on cohesion funds and agricultural support, we receive net about a billion zloty, which is to say about $300 million of net transfers per month from the EU. So every district, every region is now having a water treatment plant, a bypass or a highway being built with EU money, and you can see those placards everywhere. People feel that Europe is really relevant to their daily lives. 2 years ago, we joined the Schengen group, which means that not only do we not need visas, we don't need passports, we don't even need identity. The border between Poland and Germany that was the cause of so many wars over 1,000 years has disappeared. We in some places, don't know where we become like a state board. And then there is the politics. We go to Brussels, and we are a member of the family, and we wheel and deal, and we take decisions that are weighty and have important implications. Just last week, we struck a deal whereby Europe's contribution to the possible Copenhagen deal on climate energy. We've decided how to share the burden amongst ourselves, and that has implications for the next couple of decades. The sums are mind-boggling. We go into tens of billions of dollars. That's the kind of politics we do in Europe. We just yesterday got the Lisbon Treaty, which means that we'll be politicking hard about electing the new high representative, the chairman of the council, which is to say the people who will be representing Europe on the world stage. And in that process, we are players. We cannot easily be ignored. We put together coalitions that the founding members of Europe cannot help but take into account. Now, as regards the United States, it's different. You're still at the 20 or 30 Fulbright scholarships, for example, which were crucial during the Cold War, very helpful. But, for example, today our students get 5,000 Erasmus scholarships per annum, and journalists and scientists, and it's a completely different scale. So I think we should be realistic about where it is that we have truly common interests, where we can truly help each other. And I think there are such areas. One, for example, is Eastern Partnership. Poland and Sweden have persuaded Europe, and under the Czech presidency, we launched in Prague, back in May, a program to make six countries of the former Soviet Union, Ukraine, Belarus, Moldova, and the Caucasus three, more compatible with ourselves, which is to say, we will introduce, if they so wish, a deep and comprehensive free trade zone, which is to say, we will integrate with them economically. We will, in due course, create an area of visa-free travel. And we have, in this current financial perspective, which is to say for the next 5 years, we've devoted 600 million euros to various people-to-people projects, fighting corruption, setting up ombudsman services, helping them draft their laws, and similar helpful things. 600 million euros is a good seed money. And I think this is something that the United States could be very usefully involved. Because we think we have a program that will work in the long run, that is also tangentially in the U.S. interest, and you could just join in into something we're doing anyway. Another thing that is a project in which we need each other, where we have real assets to bring to bear. I'm more like Poland was 20 years ago than like the United States. The United States is a big, powerful, and intimidating country. They're much more likely to listen to us when we say, look, we've done it, this is how it's done, and if we could do it, so can you. And so I would say to you that the program that we launched 9 years ago in Warsaw called Community of Democracies under the previous Democrat administration is something that we could do together. You have the global reach, you have the resources, we have the technology, the people, and the reputation. And then I come to the third issue, which is what I think has been overemphasized in the last couple of years, which is the security dimension. The assumption has been that the bedrock of the relationship between the United States and our region would be the U.S. guarantee to NATO, but in particular to countries that feel more exposed than the old members, need to feel exposed today. And that, of course, has much to do with Russia. And we still don't know which way Russia will go. There are some encouraging trends in Russia. The government that I represent has worked very hard to improve relations with Russia. I've been to the Kremlin, to Moscow several times. Sergei Lavrov has been, prime ministers has been. And there are things that Russian authorities say which are hugely encouraging. For example, President Dmitry Medvedev said in his article entitled Go Russia, quote, "Today is the first time in our history that we have a chance to prove to ourselves and to the world that Russia can develop in a democratic way, that a transition to the next higher stage of civilization is possible. And this will be accompanied through the non-violent methods, not by coercion, but by persuasion, not through suppression, but rather the development of the creative potential of every individual," end quote. And I'm sure most of us have heard the statement that the Russian president has made in the last few days about the crimes of Stalinism, which I think is really important, because I think the argument over history has replaced ideology in Russia. And so there is that, and there are also, as we know, attempts to create a neo-Stalinist state ideology for Russia. And there are the opposite pressures, exemplified, for example, in what happened in the Caucasus a year ago, exemplified in a new security doctrine that apparently will envisage the first and preemptive use of tactical nuclear warheads. And then there is the subtly named recent exercise on the Polish border called Zapad 2009, the largest Russian military exercise on the NATO border since the fall of communism, with 900 tanks and the launch of three nuclear-capable tactical medium-range missiles. And so if Russia goes the right way, we'll all be happily living in a democratic nirvana over the over most of Eurasia, and then there is no problem. If, however, Russia were to repeat somewhere what she did in Georgia last year, well, then the question arises not whether the United States wants to fulfill the security guarantee implied in Article 5, but whether it will be physically capable of doing so. Will you make it in time if push comes to shove? And that's what we in our region are asking ourselves. Thank you.
The course of the Lisbon Treaty, or when the Lisbon Treaty was really in place, would there have been any difference, do you think, in approach? Would the EU have handled it any differently? Would there be, in fact, the Lisbon Treaty, does it mean more cohesion or during a crisis potentially more conflict over foreign policy priorities?
Well, let me start with the last. Look, on Georgia, we acted very cohesively. I mean, it was, if I may say so, at my urging at the ministerial level, at the urging of our prime minister, at the heads of government level, but France, which held the presidency of the EU, sprung to action and did more than perhaps some of the people that the Georgians were counting upon. So it's not that Europe lacked unity, it's just that there is only so much that we as the West can do for a country that is not yet a member and is a logistical nightmare to assist. And on the Lisbon Treaty, it depends, because theoretically speaking, we will at least have a spokesman both at the head of government level and at the ministerial level, but I think the roles are so vaguely defined that everything depends on what caliber people we elect in the first round, because those people will set the precedence of what those jobs are. Are they just jobs to coordinate a little bit, or are they real powerful jobs of leaders who know their mind, have a vision, and are determined to bring Europe round and to deploy Europe's considerable resources to put those visions through. So that's why I think the next 2 weeks of consultations and who we come up with for those two jobs is absolutely crucial. The Lisbon Treaty, you may be interested to know, enables to do what the Bush administration was known for the concept the Bush administration launched, namely coalitions of the willing. Because, as you know, we have in Europe some countries that are neutral and even somewhat allergic to anything resembling hard security. But under Lisbon, we will be able to go forward in certain areas, and I can give you a preview. I expect the Polish-French summit tomorrow to unveil a major political initiative that NATO planners used to say that God created Poland for tank warfare. And so these tanks that we're exercising were 250 kilometers of flat ground from our capital city. We don't know what kind of message the Russian Federation was trying to send to us, but you can imagine what we heard. Big Brzezinski said, and he wasn't the only one, what really reassured Germany, for example, during the Cold War, was not Article 5, which, as you know, is in fact quite vague, but the presence of 300,000 American troops in Germany. Now, we have, I think, at the latest count, 6 American troops. 1, 2, 3, 4. I decide the embassy. If you had on the one hand 900 tanks and on the other 6 troops, would you be convinced?
Yeah, I think I can basically say the same as Vivian.
And I wonder in your opinion, despite, of course, the very warranted good efforts of relation to that EU policy, and what would a joint
for a constructive Russian approach and for Russia to take a benign trajectory. But I take your assumption that there is a... I personally traveled to Kiev last summer at the behest of the presidency of the EU with my German colleague, a paper which was a list of conditions if Ukraine